And we welcome you inside the Hoop Ball Sacramento Kings podcast. Sam Comente here with you, alongside, as always, the incomparable, the all-knowing Jill Adge. And Jill, I want to start out by saying that I'm very, very happy that we did not record this podcast. We're recording this on Monday in the evening, but I'm glad, so glad, we did not record this immediately after the Kings played and lost yesterday to the Warriors, because I was not very happy. I don't know what your initial reactions were.
I didn't see all of the game.
Jill was road tripping, everybody. She's in Vegas.
I can only see, like, I only know from just the bits and pieces I saw. And the bits and pieces I saw were similar to what we saw in the first two games, where it was, again, you have a shot, but you threw it away by giving the ball away for free. Like, yeah. On especially on transition plays after you make good defensive stops. Like, this team, at least through the three games so far, is notorious for doing something really good and then shooting themselves in the foot, like, shortly after. And the last two teams have taken advantage of
the good
turnovers.
Teams.
They've turned them into points. And these are the ones where you, based on how they're playing the fourth quarter right now, they basically have to play perfect through three quarters to give themselves a chance. So far, they've played three really good teams, and it's not going to get any easier. The West is the West, let alone they're playing, you know, some of the best in the West right now. But I do think that they could take this opportunity to show some grit and character and build on it, because they're not going to be perfect, right? Three games in, no team watching all these games. Like, they're all rusty. They're all still getting conditioned.
Yep.
And whether we like it or not, this team is getting conditioned to playing both sides of the court. You know, last year they only played one side. Right now they're having to learn to condition their body to be able to handle playing both ways. And that was one of the things that, you know, I was kind of on Davion, you know, when we were talking last week, as I felt like he still had to get his body conditioned to be able, you know what I mean, to let alone playing an NBA game, but to being able to play both sides. And credit to him, yesterday he showed, right, that he could do it from both sides. So
he listened to our podcast.
Yeah, right.
To me, slander him, and he started put up 20 points, yeah, 22 points.
To me, out of anything, this team just needs to figure out how to realize how many times you have to see yourself making the same bad pass and realize maybe I shouldn't do it. Like,
right.
You can't do it against these teams. That's, I mean, you might be able to get away with it, you know, from some of the others, but so far I'd rather see them not do it. And I don't know if it's because they're still kind of out of sorts on the offensive side, even though like, I think it was Tim, he had that list of like the first half and the second half numbers. Kings are top 10 in everything in the first half of the game, and then they're, I think, 16 and 23 or something like that, like, overall. But then in the second half, they're, you know, far back for offense, and then 30th again for defense. So it's like
that tells the story right there.
Jekyll and Hyde. Whether it's coaching not making adjustments, players not making adjustments, to good teams making adjustments at the half, right? Like, what you would expect. But I will also say, like, with the Jazz game, and this might have happened yesterday too, that they had opportunities to increase their lead on the Jazz, like, really start, you know, running and giving it to them. And that's when they made the turnovers, right, which prevented it and allowed the Jazz to stay in the game to do what a good team does, right? They just need to keep it close enough to where they know how to close out games. And at this point, hopefully this team can figure it out, because I think that's one of the frustrating things, right? We know they have it in them. Like, three games, three straight halves, they showed us how they could play really well. And then two halves or three halves where they just showed us.
Yeah.
That,
I mean,
they can't play really well. So
you put it best.
Medium somewhere.
They are Jekyll and Hyde right now. They're very strong in the first half, and then very inconsistent and poor. I mean, I would say third quarter, they're kind of inconsistent. You could see the wheels start to fall off. And then the fourth, the wheels are gone.
They really fall off.
And they're really just a train wreck, really. It's kind of tough to watch. And it's a lot of stagnant offense, not a lot of ball movement, really, really poor shot selection or passes. De'Aaron Fox had two plays, Jill, that I'm not sure if you watched because I think you were driving, but two plays where he dove into the lane and tried to make a pass where I don't even think he saw where he was or what he was doing. He threw the ball straight up in the air, and it was mind-boggling because he doesn't do stuff like that. And he's really forcing it because his shots aren't going down. So he's like, okay, different philosophy. I'm going to attack, try and get to the line or try and draw the defense in, find teammates, which is a great strategy. That's how you should play when you're fast. You got to make a pass though to somebody. You can't just go in, go blind, throw it up in the air. I didn't think I would need to tell De'Aaron Fox that, but I am because that was pretty ugly what I saw from Fox yesterday. And we'll get to more on him later. But yeah, you said it in the beginning. It's three games. The Phoenix Suns, who they play next on Wednesday, are 1-2. They were second in the West last year. The Brooklyn Nets, everyone's favorite to win the East, including our favorite to win the East. They're 1-2. The Lakers are 1-2. So it's early, and it's 82 games, not 72. You have a little bit more of a buffer to begin. But it is more painful, I think, this way to lose when you're the Kings these past two games and you're Kings fans because you were there. You were
right. It's not just them going out and getting blown out. Yeah.
You're in these games and you're playing well against good teams. And then you, more than anything, destroy yourselves.
And I would say it's not like they're not making turnovers, right? And you're just seeing really hard competitive games for four quarters and the better team just winning, right? Like when you have the stupid excuses, right? Of like, I just want to see if they're going to get beat, I want to see them play a good four quarters and just get beat by a better team. Not to where I see them shooting themselves in the foot and then going, well, would they have won? I don't know. that's what super, yeah.
It's more painful.
Super frustrating, yeah.
It's a different style of Kings basketball than we're used to, which I mean that in a positive way. It's more entertaining. It's also more painful at the end. Makes it hard for me to have to go to bed afterwards. But we will highlight the people that were outstanding yesterday. Harrison Barnes continues to be terrific. He had 24 points, 7 rebounds. He's averaging, just off the top of my head, I don't know this for sure, but it feels like he's averaging about 25 a game, which is incredible from Harrison. Davion, like I joked, must have listened to our podcast on Friday where I kind of ripped on him for not attacking more or getting more shots to go, because we need that from him and he can do it. Well, he did it, Jill. 22 points yesterday for Davion. Obviously, that's a career high. But then on Golden State's side, Steph Curry, who I felt like they did a good job containing more often than not on the defensive end, especially with Mitchell running around with him, he had 27 points still. Jordan Poole had 22 points because Poole's a very good player, starting to really burst on the scene. And then Andrew Wiggins had 17, including a couple back-breaking threes late in the fourth quarter. So not enough contribution from the rest of the Kings roster outside of Barnes and Davion, whereas the Warriors had a lot of contribution from all the guys that played. Even Gary Payton Jr., Gary Payton II, actually, as he goes by, put up a lot of high-effort plays for the Warriors. I didn't even know he was in the league or that Gary Payton had a son with the same name as him. So I learned something yesterday. But I don't know how much of the game you watched. It was just the same tale as the Jazz, except that this one got a little bit more away from it at the end. They ended up losing 119-107. Lost by 12 in this case. Let me ask you, how are you feeling about De'Aaron Fox?
I'm fine.
Okay.
I'm fine. I still, his body type has changed. He's getting paid the big money. He's having to prove that he can play both ends of the court. But his start last year is very similar to the start this year, and the guy ended up having the best season of his career. So again, we're three games in. I know it's frustrating, and with this team, it's frustrating because he is, getting paid the big money now. And when our shooters are having bad nights, like we've seen our three-point shooting fall apart, right? You can't afford to have him to have any kind of off night. Like this team can never really afford, unfortunately, for him to have
they go through Fox, right?
Like it's just, and that's the burden of the guy getting paid what he's getting paid and being the face of the team. So I'm not worried. There's plenty of season left. He has shown me that he ends up figuring it out. So right now I have no reason to believe that he's not going to figure out. Like, obviously, yeah, there's things he needs to work on. And I think he's kind of forcing things a little bit. But in the same sense, I also think he's getting hacked every time out there and nothing's being called. And,
yeah, I was about to say that.
You know, there's probably some ailments and he's playing through them. So, you know what I mean? Like, it's not like he's coming out of the game, unlike what others have done. You know what I mean? Like, he's playing through. He's playing through, you know, pain. So,
and they need to help. This is a different way of looking at it. You're spot on. And he's not getting the calls.
And I will say this, sorry, but I do think part of his problem is when Holmes goes out, like, you just see a lot of the guards struggle. And when he's sitting because of foul trouble, it's the team hurt. Like, that's how important Holmes is. And so when he's not in the middle and on the court and Fox is trying to drive in, like, it's him. It looks like it's him going against five guys. Like, it's not happening. So I do think you're seeing some of his struggles being attributed to who's on the court with him.
Yeah. You can make a good argument off what you just said for that's a reason right there why Marvin Bagley should play a little bit more when Holmes is not able to play, because if we're choosing between Bagley or Tristan Thompson or Alex Lennis to that big man that can come off the bench and run that pick and roll and attack the basket and finish at close range off of Fox playing off of him. Yeah. I would choose Marvin Bagley every time over Tristan Thompson and Alex Len to do that type of skill set of Rashawn Holmes. I understand Thompson's ahead of Bagley right now. We know that. They really like his veteran leadership. He didn't look good yesterday, and he hasn't looked great. Yeah.
Right. I mean, this could be the same situation that we saw with Deadman. Holmes. We're three games in, so we very well could see changes. Like, it's
– I hope.
I just don't think we're necessarily going to see changes after – three games against the teams that we came in, right? If this team legitimately has a plan,
you hope they have a plan.
We've all heard, you know, why what's going on is going on, whether anyone agrees with it or not. Like, that's, unfortunately, that's the way it is. We don't get to make those decisions. But, if it keeps continuing, I don't know how you can go with the status quo, 100%.
He's 22. He's uber talented. He's sitting right there. He's healthy, especially right now. You know, he's not out on the court, so you know he's ready to go. I hope nothing's hurting him. What I was going to say about Fox, though, kind of another spin of that. When he's forcing it, that sucks, and he's struggling, that sucks because he's your guy. But other guys need to help him. This is De'Aaron Fox's team.
Sure.
But you can't just go off of De'Aaron Fox the whole way, right? That's unrealistic for any player. Maybe LeBron, I guess. Shit, Tyrese needs to start keep being more aggressive.
End of the day, it's next man up, right?
Yeah, right. Or it's just help the guy. Yeah. It's not like Fox is the entire team. There's talented players on this team. They need to start doing stuff. Terrence Davis needs to figure out what the hell he's doing, whatever it is that he's doing. He needs to be a scorer off the bench that makes a lot of threes and highlight real alley-oop dunks and dives to the basket. Like, you know, he's a freak athlete. We're seeing a completely discombobulated, really not fun Terrence Davis right now. And then Buddy Hield, I tweeted this last night watching the game because he was just making me rip my hair out, Jill. He had that Buddy Hield game where he did nothing because he wasn't knocking down his shots. And you know he doesn't play defense. He had to go against Steph Curry.
Two good and one bad. Like,
I know.
And we know going in, like, this, like, as long as he's here, like, this is what we're getting. I don't ever expect
that's Jekyll and Hyde is Buddy Hield.
You know, and so when other people are off, it makes it that much.
Mm-hmm. It highlights Fox even more.
Yes.
And, but Buddy did. I mean, really, they had Davion on Steph, and then they would smartly bring out a screener, a big man to screen. So then Hield would switch over to him. It seemed like every time they'd pick the guy who Hield was guarding to come out and screen. So then Hield would switch. And now you have Hield on Steph, which is a battle Steph's going to win every fucking time. 100% of the time. And Buddy didn't even look like he ever stood really a chance. And that's being maybe a little too mean of Buddy. But yeah, he doesn't stand a chance against Steph Curry. No one really does, but Buddy for sure. And so that's what's frustrating about Buddy. And you make a good point. Like, it's two good games and one bad game. But if Buddy's not scoring, this is why, again, you keep him on the bench. If Buddy doesn't score, what does Buddy do for you? I don't know. I don't know what he does. He gives you energy. He
doesn't
quit.
The first two games, he gave you more. He gave you
rebounds. but he was scoring, so yes. He was that. I mean, he played a little bit better and more confident.
No, see,
it seemed.
I thought the first two games he had like 6 or 7 rebounds, multiple assists. Like
yeah, but he was scoring. My point is, when Buddy's not scoring, everything else kind of gets lost.
Oh, you're saying he doesn't do anything if he's not scoring?
Like, yeah, it's like he kind of just shuts down. Yeah, that was my point.
Couple more to see.
No, absolutely.
But I get from one game. Okay, I get it.
From one game, it just seems like when he doesn't have that shot, he doesn't remember to do the other things. He doesn't remember to go get those rebounds he can, because he's not confident what he's doing, and he's so trying to get it in the bucket.
Yeah, and at least from clips I saw, it looked like he missed a couple different reads on offense too, where he had like wide open lanes and was, you know, chucking the long threes and different things.
Yeah.
But again, that stuff they need to handle, right? Watching film, and if he's not listening to you, then you need to address it, right? Like that's.
The bench has got to step up. I'm going to ask you a question about that here in a minute, but really we can sum up these last two Kings games very simply. We can analyze it from every angle if we wanted to. The breakdown is very easy. You start out strong and start out fast. You look great going into half. You come out of half. I don't know if it's because you're not making adjustments or it's because you're tired from putting a little bit more effort on the defensive end, and it dips. And then it dips even farther to avalanche.
Or you don't know how to adjust to another team's adjustment.
Right. That. And then you fall off in the second half and you lose the game. And then tied in that, of course, are really poor passes and decisions that you make, and then really poor possessions and or shot selections that don't need to be there. You don't need to shoot the ball 2 seconds into the shot clock from 30 feet, Buddy Hield or Harrison Barnes, just, you know, off the screen, pulling up and trying to three. I don't know if that necessarily happened yesterday, but just giving examples. Then I don't know how you feel about this, but one frustrating thing about Walton's offense, and I've touched on this, and most offenses do this now in the modern NBA, but they're just so heavily reliant on the three, and it's great when it works, but when it doesn't, like it didn't yesterday and it didn't work against the Jazz, and you just keep doing it to try and get yourself out of it, it's not basketball that I enjoy watching, truthfully.
Yeah,
do something else. Find different ways to score.
Fourth in the NBA right now, I think, in three-point percentage. Not great. That's going to have to adjust. Yeah.
And you just got to be able to adapt. You know, I understand you want to keep shooting threes. That's where there's more points there. You know, and I'm sure the analytics point to, we want to shoot threes and we want to run. Obviously, that's what every team's trying to do. But if everyone's not knocking them down, okay, you have to get a little bit more creative. You have to start running some sets, getting to the free throw line, which the Kings, we could go on a whole tangent about how they are one of the teams that just does not get those calls.
Well, and the issue with this team, as we've seen in previous years, they have a really hard time with offense. And whether that's – and I almost have a hard time believing that's Alvin Gentry, right? Like the offensive mind that he is, that are players just not running stuff correctly? Or, you know what I mean? Like, are they not finishing out, you know, plays or things that we're supposed to do? Or, like I said, where it looked like Buddy missed some assignments on, you know, on ones that were – that were there that would prevent. But I do think looking at how the Warriors offense, I mean, no one's standing there. It's constantly moving. I mean, and it's pretty glaring when
Walton came from Steve Kerr's
and guys stand in the corner. But to me, again, like I'm saying, I have a hard time. Alvin Gentry is writing, like, as anyone will say, one of the great offensive basketball minds right now, that's what he's telling them to do. But, you know, I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, we're not in there to hear.
Yeah. And we're not deep enough in this thing yet.
So it doesn't help. But yeah, no, there has to be more movement. I mean, it's not chucking in the first couple seconds, and there's got to be more movements. And how many times does KD have to say on a broadcast, I would have liked to have seen them swing the ball from side to side and make.
And Doug used to say the same thing.
And make the defense move. And so, yes.
Yeah,
agree.
They acted like they had never seen a 2-3 zone before, which, you know,
if that shuts you down, you're going to be in for a bad game.
Yeah.
No matter what. Yeah.
I think Damian said this at one podcast where he goes, I think I know basketball, but in comparison to an NBA player, I know nothing. Yeah. And it's like, I know enough, though, about a 2-3 zone to know you are only going to be able to break that down with constant ball movement until you find that weakness, and then you dive in, right, and you make the shot, or you take the shot because the guy's open in the corner once you swing it around, or there's a guy open in the middle of the paint, whatever. But you don't beat a 2-3 zone standing around holding the ball. You only beat it, really, which is why Steve Kerr switched to that. Obviously, and Mike Brown, who's like the defensive coordinator, that's why they do that, right?
Yeah.
They see and that I this think... team's standing around, so it's like, okay, we're going to switch to a zone, force you to try and pass it, and they don't.
And everyone talks about Golden State's offense so much that people don't realize they're a top defensive team. And they have been the last couple of years, even when they had no staff. Like, those you know, bench guys that they had, right, that everyone is making fun of, like, they put in the effort, they put in the work, they beat you to your spots. How many – I mean, just in the clips I saw, how many times did I see – someone have the ball and then try and dribble in, and then like they didn't even make it past the 3-point line and they like turned back around or moved it. Like there wasn't even any physical activity of like trying to get in.
Yeah.
So
they're tough. Yeah. No, that was something I did learn. I mean, I knew they had been a good defensive team, but I was impressed, Jill, by just how good they were defensively.
And the Kings have to be aggressive in those stands. Like, they can't back away again from teams being physical. They have to keep going. So we'll see if that ends up, adjusting as we go. So
with all that little detox out there for us, I feel a little bit better now. I was, like I said, I was angry going to bed last night after that, the way it ended. I'm going to hit you with a couple questions here, Jill. This is a panic meter, a ranking, if you will, of between 1 and 10, 1 being you're totally calm, you haven't even thought about it until right now, and then 10 being you're freaking out, you're about to mass tweet about it. These are storylines prevalent to the Kings right now that we're seeing talked about. And you're just going to tell me between 1 and 10 how panicked you are in reference to this storyline. So we already touched on Fox's slow start, so I'm actually not going to mention that because you already said, I'm fine,
not
I'm
panicked,
calm.
Right.
I'm not panicked. So instead, I'm going to go with the first question being the Kings bench struggles, especially outside of Buddy Hield. What is your panic meter, your ranking on how you feel about their bench production so far, or lack thereof?
I would say I'm pretty low on the meter again with that, like a 4, just because I know the teams they played
are good defense.
Again, have top 10 guys. Like, you're playing full starters, full bench. Like, there will be teams that they come against that do not have the depth that these three have, right? That have put them into the playoffs. So again, like, if I'm seeing this, through game 10 through game 20, then I'll have something to talk about. But
I'm panicking.
At this point, I'm not. And I've seen guys have good games, just not together. So it's not like we haven't seen anybody off the bench have a good game. It's them finally being consistent and putting it together, which they did in the preseason. So we just need them to do it now.
Right.
So
we're going to say about, you said about a 4.
I'm under 5 on that.
Under 5. Good answer. All right, next one. How panicked are you about Walton's game planning and putting what he's putting together? You talk about offensive sets, which Gentry has a big impact on that. I guess more this is a question about Luke Walton and his coaching, because a lot of people were talking about game plan and like what are these plays? Are they running any plays here for Luke? How do you feel about, we'll make this more broad, how do you feel about Luke Walton 3 games in?
I would say again,
low.
Not
thinking
5,
too much about it.
Just because I didn't expect them to win any of these games going in, knowing the opponents. I was hoping to at least sneak 1, if not more. And knowing that we could have had 3, right? We wouldn't even be talking about any of this stuff, right? And that's what's frustrating again. But after 3 games, I'm not worried. Again, if we keep seeing it, I'll be worried. But to me, I'm more so not worried because I know this is it. This is it for them. Like, it's right. So
this is Luke. This is Luke's last little.
If he doesn't figure it out, we could say panic, but he's going to be gone regardless. So
it's a good point. Fire Walton just got back to trending on Twitter rather quick after the first game. There was a lot of compliments. People were applauding his post-game speech that the Kings media page shared. They were like, oh, we like this side of Luke. Dropping F-bombs and being, more vocal.
Yeah.
And obviously, shipped very quick.
And well, the same way I saw, I put something, up there about how they can't keep giving the ball away for free. And I saw someone try and blame that on Luke. And I'm like, okay, I get we don't like, people don't like Luke, but I'm not going to blame him for the Barnes, Halliburton, Fox just blatant like passes that go to
Stupidity.
nobody. Like, that's not, sorry. Like, there are plenty of things we can blame on Luke, but I don't think our best players making poor decisions on the court is because of him in transition. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, sorry, I'm not pinning
Obviously, that's on his fault. He's not
that
on the court making that terrible outlet pass. So
on him. I
Jill's
get we
under.
want to blame him for everything, but
It's
that's sorry,
easy,
I'm
you
not
know?
blaming him for
Coaches are always the
that.
scapegoats. Walton's under five again. Your panic meter for him, your concern for him. All right, third question here. How concerned are we? How panicked are we about second half collapses?
I'm getting dog park.
They are a bargain, so I'm going to continue. The second half
Yeah.
collapses. No, you're
Okay. The
good.
fact that if it was so extreme where it's they're playing so well and then it's so bad, it's not like they're playing so well and then it's like average. It's like the fact that it's always so extreme. Like, I want to see it come down to not so extreme.
Right. So we'll say plus above five, say seven, six or seven on that panic meter ranking.
Say like maybe five or six, like, but I'm
Okay.
not like anywhere near 10.
Yeah. Nor should you be this early. And then the last one, how concerned are we, how panicked are we, Jill, about the continued lack of calls for the Kings? They were the Warriors, this discrepancy that was there yesterday between how many free throws the Warriors shot and how many the Kings shot, especially when you consider the Kings and how they play. They're attacking, they run. De'Aaron Fox is on the team. I mean, it's bullshit. It should not be that big of a gap. And Luke Walton said something
Yes.
to that effect. I don't think
Yes.
anything's going to change. This is the card they're dealt being Sacramento. Is that what you're going to
You
say?
hit the nail on the head. So on my drive, I was listening to the Whistleblower podcast. I don't know if anyone's listened to it yet. Have you listened to
I
it?
haven't, no.
Okay. But it's on the whole referee scandal.
From the Western Conference Finals? Talk
Well,
going back
th
then.
that the there is an episode like on the Kings, but it's the betting, the point spread, like,
Yeah.
and how they I recommend just listening to it because what I thought happened, or like the story that like we kind of were told, based on the media, there's so much more to it. And like some of the refs still in the league, you have a lot of question marks of could they
That's
have been
crazy.
involved and got and like are still doing what they're doing. But so I will just say go listen to it. It's pretty crazy. But it totally, I mean, we've always looked at them in a different light, but it still, and they very much were saying it's you have your company guys and the stars are getting what they're gonna get. Like, that's just how it is. And the team, certain teams are gonna have certain, calls. Whether refs like it or not, they all have biases and they would talk all the time about their biases prior to games and all,
It's a
and all these
bad move.
different,
Sharing your
all these
personal.
different kinds of things. And so it's yeah, like it will make you look at it differently, but it's
So your point is
sadly it's
we should
nothing
be
new.
concerned. Yeah, and it's nothing new.
And I don't see it changing until we're good, but it's hard to be
Yeah.
good when you're getting this stuff against you all the time as well.
It's the lay of the land, and it's a tough, like,
Yeah.
the way it is,
And
if you will.
like Fox said, they play like they're not gonna get it in practice. So unfortunately, these guys just have to keep playing through it. And it sucks. I mean,
And
it sucks, but
if Fox does get the
yeah.
calls though, which he will at times in the game, obviously it's not like they never call anything, but he still needs to make the free throws. You know, you can complain all you want, De'Aaron, and I will too. But shit, dude, if you get to the line, you're the point
You
guard.
gotta make them.
You
Yeah.
have to make them. He's still struggling in that aspect of his game, which is so frustrating, just because of the position he plays more than
Yeah.
anything, that you can miss so many of those free throws.
Yeah.
But
But
I
I
know he
still
works
think
at
too, the
that.
bad calls going against Holmes hurt just as much as Fox not getting calls too. Like, that's
Yeah.
the unfortunate thing. Because the numbers are drastic when he's on the court and when they're off. And that's a whole, separate issue between who we have backing up. But I'm not even sure if Bagley being in there totally changes how drastic the numbers are either. Like,
Yeah.
that's
defense will go down.
That's the crazy thing is, like, there's that much of a difference that I'm not sure. And outside of another Holmes duplicate, like, you're bringing that up. At least through three games.
Yeah.
So, but these guys got to figure out a way to stay on the court. Like, that's.
Well, it is. I will. Last little thought here before we go to this next segment. Next little thing. The fact that Rashawn Holmes will get a technical in this game that he did, like he did,
for arguing.
There you go. Yeah, for yelling at the ref, sharing his frustration. What I don't, you know, Jerry Reynolds used to say, you have to be able to be somewhere on the court as a defender. You have to have some place to be. And in that situation where Holmes got the technical, got the foul, then the technical, it was a situation where he blocked Curry going to the baseline. I don't know. I would think you would just let that go. Curry decided to take the crazy shot. Got obviously the foul call very late, ridiculously late to call the foul.
Mm-hmm.
But he yells at him, immediately gets a technical. Draymond Green screams and bitches and moans throughout the game. God, he is just such an annoying player. He really is. And I can see why even Warrior fans are like, we don't really even like him anymore. But yeah, gets nothing. But he's earned it.
Well, and it's one thing if he's going to do it and other people can do it and it's not going to be called, right? But it's when it's that drastic where he's allowed to do it, but nobody else is, right?
Yeah, it's like playing favorites almost. It's like the kids school that, you know, yeah. One kid's
shame getting, when certain guys get the taunting after the main basket that, and other guys don't, right?
Yeah, it's playing favorites.
We saw Bagley get it last year on something less than what Draymond. Draymond did yesterday in his after, you know, basket. So it's again, the lack of consistency between with the refs. And unfortunately, Sacramento, we are, you know all too well how that goes. So
this is the hell we live in.
Learn how to play through it. Like, it's not changing. So again, they got to figure it out.
Last question here about the Warriors, and then moving on from this Warrior game for good, closing the book on this till the next time we play them. They're 3-0, the Warriors. It's the first time they've been 3-0 since the last time they went to the finals in 2016. That was the year, I believe, they lost to the Cavaliers in Game 7 thanks to Kyrie Irving's clutch shot. But they were upset. That was the last year they went to the finals, but last year when they played the Warriors, or the Cavaliers. God, I'm sounding stupid. Point being, it's been a while since they started 3-0. Surprising. How good will the Warriors be in 2021, Jill? How do you feel about them now? They were the play-in team last year. They obviously lost to the Lakers in LA on LeBron's shot where he was seeing seven different buckets. Couldn't see. I couldn't see the bucket. So stupid. How good are they going to be this year? Especially with Clay coming back halfway.
I think what this team has going for them is their supporting cast works, right? Mm-hmm. They've proven they can work. And so now you're adding your best talent to it. I mean, I don't know why they shouldn't. Like, they should be good, mm-hmm. right?
Like top five in the West, you're thinking?
And they play both sides of the ball. That's going to get you far in the NBA when you have guys that play both ends of the ball. And these guys aren't flashy names, right? And that's what I actually, like, enjoyed about them last year when they didn't have the stars. And it was just, I mean, these were guys who were still, in terms of people were saying, will they be in the league or not, right? I mean, these are guys that the Warriors, they homegrown. And again, right, that they had great personnel and matched it to great the stars that they were going to have coming back.
Yeah.
And they can all shoot. They can all play defense. So, yeah, I wouldn't be – I'll almost be shocked if they're not a top five, I would say, in the West.
Right now.
If they keep up this pace, I mean.
And then add back Thompson and probably acquire someone at the deadline. They will surely do.
And
that's
the thing, right? And they have young talent. If they want to acquire, they have picks. Yeah, they have options.
Moody hasn't played Kuminga, right? That's how you say his last name?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Jonathan. He's been injured. Jonathan. Yeah.
He's hurt.
Yeah, they have good depth, right? And
they do.
Yeah, they have options.
Porter and Bielitsa were two very under-the-radar sound acquisitions moves that
I'm excited to see Otto healthy again because he was a guy I think
and no pressure on fans, him
right will say they've always wanted, you know, the Otto Porter on the Kings, and he just had not been healthy the last 2 years, but he has again shown that if he's healthy he can contribute, and another guy that will give you both sides of the ball. So
absolutely
Yeah.
And Jordan Poole now is someone I'll keep watching because I enjoy his game and how much he's just worked at it, gotten better. And then a shout out to Juan Toscano-Anderson. The story with the number 95 was something that has been out there, I'm sure, for a couple years now that he's been in the league. I had just heard it for the first time yesterday, being that it was like the street that he was living in, kind of in the hood in Oakland or something where he grew up.
Cool story.
Yeah. That's a very cool story. And I love players like that, that overcome a lot of adversity to get there and then to play for his hometown team.
Homegrown team. Yep.
It really doesn't get better than that. So good for him. Like
they have some good stories.
Yeah. Right. When he made his shots, I wasn't mad. I was like, he can have them. He can make those shots. All right. Time to get to the best segment here as we approach the end of this Monday show. The best segment we have, the people are craving for this. They ask for this. It's another edition of Jill's Water Cooler. And this one, you told me, Jill, before the show, is fun. It's going to make me laugh or blow my mind, which they all blow my mind.
Well, it's kind of a continuation of the one from last one where I told you about how all the out of bounds. this is the one from last one where I was saying how after every made basket, didn't get to pass it in. It was like the jump ball. But then I read another piece where it was like it wasn't always like the center jump ball. There were times when the refs would like just throw it back over the line, and it was like free for all, and they had so many people get injured that they ended up doing like a jump ball at center court. This isn't it, but like,
That's crazy. Get it.
Okay, see, but that's crazy. So this leads to that. So
fire away.
This is the beginning of out of bounds, right? Of essentially out of bounds for basketball. So in the beginning, boundaries were not defined. In most cases, they were just walls. And it wasn't until 1904 that boundaries became straight lines. The original rule regarding out-of-bounds situations turned out to be disastrous. Ball possession was awarded to the first player to touch the ball after it went out of bounds.
Wait.
So
the person that touched it last would take the ball.
The first person to touch it after it goes out, you're awarded the ball.
Okay. So opposite.
This led to pushing, shoving, elbowing, desperate dives, and total bedlam. It was even worse when the ball ended up in the balconies, with all players making a mad dash to be the first up the stairs, which created log jams and fights. Teams resorted to forming wedges to block the opponents from going
upstairs. Oh my God.
They even tried to bypass the stairs by hoisting players up in the air in an effort to be the first to reach the ball in the balcony. So they were like stacking themselves on top of each other to like try and get a person to reach up into the
balcony. Isn't real, Jill. This can't be real.
To touch the ball. So in addition to where I was saying, they didn't have boundaries, right? At the beginning of all this, the ball went out of bounds. So this then created basketball used to be called the cage game and players cagers. So you went from no out of bounds to the first people to touch the ball to now it's being referred to as a cage game. So
like
what they started doing was
they
put wire mesh or chicken wire or chain link fence around the entire court. So imagine this. So between the fans and the players, there's now a chain link or chicken wire fence between the end court line and you. So they did this in an effort to make the game go faster by eliminating all out of bounds or out of bounds delays. However, in reality, it served as more of a barrier to protect players from rowdy spectators so they couldn't throw stuff onto the court or they couldn't go get in fights trying to catch the ball after it went out of bounds. The wire cage actually resulted in additional rough play with players body checking each other into the wire mesh as
what year is this again?
Hold on.
I'm sorry.
I'll get to that. So, so they
I'm
ended
lost.
Up turning into hockey.
Crazy.
So they ended up like running into this wire mesh. Players often received cuts, bruises, and even incurred infections from the rusting wire mesh. Although the use of cages were abandoned by 1933, the term cagers is still used today.
Holy
so in 1913, the out-of-bounds rule was changed to the current rule of the team causing or touching the ball last when it goes out of bounds, loses possession. This rule change was a major impact in reducing the physical play that was a commonplace in the early game. So prior to 1913 was how they handled that.
So to recap, I mean, I can't even recap all that. That was insane. That was like a novel of like fiction, but it was real. That was a true story. That's you just
how
told
basketball
us.
Used to be played.
Man, what a time!
So literally between like 18, what was it, 90s to 1913, you had the people running out of bounds and going crazy.
And then, the last person to touch it, it was theirs, actually. So it was theirs. The complete opposite of what out of bounds is.
The first person to touch it. It could just roll out of bounds, and the first person that dives and touches it, it's your ball.
Yeah.
So, like, you had people going crazy trying to run to it. Yeah. And then the cage wiring stopped in 1933. So that whole time, you had, like, the craziness of 1890s to 1913, you had the first to touch out of bounds. And from 1913 to 1933, you had the chicken wire hockey mesh fights.
That does seem entertaining. I mean, that would have been funny to watch. That would have been nuts. Yeah. Holy
and
crap.
Now have what we have now.
So the chain link fence, just to clarify on this, because this is a concept that's definitely crazy.
Or chicken wire. Yeah.
Chicken wire fence, like they're chickens, is... Mm-hmm. That was on the, like, it was protecting the bench area and the coaches? Is that what you said?
It was, literally around the end lines of the court.
Oh,
like,
okay. So
the ball never
they're really in, literally in a cage. Yeah. Okay.
Like, so.
The ball always stayed live.
To eliminate the delay of games of the balls going out of bounds. And a lot of, essentially created a cage and the ball never went out. Like, it's guys just.
Ping ponging all over the place.
Body checking each other.
Yeah.
And, yeah.
That's hockey. That's literally hockey. The kid's not going to get out of play.
Yes. So from 1933, you have like what you have now of like the normal, you know, lines, no fencing. And then they had the 1 year they tried the, let's not just do regular out of bounds. Let's do the jump ball. Like, so they've tried all these different kinds of things to get to where we are now.
I mean, that makes you got to throw a lot at the board before, you know, things start to stick. That makes sense, right? That you just took us on a little trip back down memory lane, I guess, back a whole. I mean, that's my favorite part about Jill's water coolers. It's like it's always a history lesson. And I'm a huge history fan. So there's a history of basketball that I know not many people probably knew. I definitely didn't know. Basketball used to be a fucking cage match, WWE SmackDown. Which I would have actually paid to watch. I'm not going to lie to you.
Would have been interesting to see.
I would have had my whiskey flask and I don't know what they would take to sporting events back then. I don't think they had popcorn and hot dogs. Just drugs and alcohol. But that, wow. Yep, that's wow.
So I hope that made people feel a little bit better after the last couple of days. And, you know, something interesting.
Yeah,
so,
to the Niner fans who are out there having a rough
weekend.
I had
a great time visualizing this.
Yeah, my mind is... is really
hopefully that novel gave you a visual.
What do you find? I don't actually want to know. This is for you. This is your thing. I don't want to even know where you find this stuff because it's better that I have no idea and I can just learn from you, Jill. So there's that latest edition of Jill's water cooler. We're going to keep throwing these out there because Jill's got so much more in her arsenal to show us and really make us think. So thank you, Jill, as always. We're going to end it there. No other better way to end a podcast than with Jill's water cooler, if you ask me. The Kings play Wednesday, 2 days off. So they play on Wednesday in Phoenix against the 1-2 Phoenix Suns.
Yep.
Start of a 4-game road trip, Jill. They play New Orleans next. They've had a rough start. They're 0-3. Dallas, also kind of a bumpy start with the new head coach in place, Jason Kidd. And then back to facing the Jazz in Utah in a game that might be just a bloodbath. And then they come home to play New Orleans again at home at Golden 1. 4-game road trip, Jill. Can I get you to make a prediction before we sign off on how we think we're going to do in that 4-game road trip? Would you even dare? 4 games.
I'm asking.
Split it?
To come out 500. Yeah.
Okay.
Split it.
That's how I feel. I think you definitely beat New Orleans and Dallas. Those are games
first
you win.
First game of the season.
Split yeah. It. And Phoenix is not totally great on this beginning
and
stretch
they just
themselves.
Came off a loss of after a back-to-back. And so they're going to come out. They're going to come out swinging. So.
Yeah. I'm going to expect them to lose the Jazz game though. Until I'm shown otherwise, the Jazz are just too damn good. So
until they can show they can play two halves of a game, yeah.
also a very good.
It's
point.
Rare you're gonna get the Jazz not playing a full game.
Yeah,
so,
you're not gonna be the Jazz on two quarters. Yeah, good point. So 4 games ahead for the Kings, really gonna test their character and what they're made of, and we'll regroup and reanalyze everything after that and make these episodes as we go. So thank you guys for listening, Niner fans out there. Take a deep breath. I don't know if you saw the photo, Jill. of Kyle Shanahan in the locker room holding the football, looking like he had been through hell, because I think he had. Geez. It's pretty funny. I'll have to share it. I have to send it to you. Things are going down fast for 49er fans. Things are going up real quick for Raider fans like myself. Makes the Kings losing not as tough. But we're hoping for a win.
What we always say, this is why you play, right? Because going into the season, people would have predicted the opposite, right? But again, this is why you play the game.
And yeah, any game, any sports game, you never know what's going to happen. So keep believing. Too early to quit, guys. Too early to give up hope. All righty, that's it for us on this Monday Hoop Ball Podcast. Slater, dudes.